This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, Ira Flatow's here with Science Friday. He'll be talking about the use of wind as an alternative energy source and why clean, renewable energy is controversial with some conservationists. Right now, if only magic wands could make lawsuits go away. J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter book series, has filed a $100 million lawsuit against the New York Daily News. The crime was to print parts of Rowling's new book 4 days before its official release. This is hardly the only story about embargoes that's in the news this spring. Hillary Clinton had one for her memoir, Living History, and her publisher threatened to sue the Associated Press when they came out with excerpts from her book. Stephen Glass and Sidney Blumenthal's books also had embargoes on them. So what exactly is an embargo, and what are the consequences of breaking one? We'll have two interviews from people who have to deal with embargoes in different aspects of their professions. But first, here is Jen Bluestein. She's a public affairs publicist who has represented Tina Brown, among others. She joins us from her home in Brooklyn, New York. And thanks very much for speaking with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
What is, in terms of the publishing industry, an embargo?
An embargo is an attempt to affect how a book is received by the public by setting up rules for when booksellers can sell it and when reviewers either receive it or are allowed to write about it.
Now, it's always dangerous at giving reporters something and saying you can't use it until such and such a date or such and such a time.
Well, the Harry Potter book was not even provided to reporters. The copy that the Daily News found, interestingly enough, in a health food store in Brooklyn.
Huh.
So they tried to keep it under wraps until the very last minute.
So what's the purpose of this publisher's embargo? Is it to create buzz? We can't get it?
I think, first of all, you create a kind of frenzy of expectation by letting little bits out one at a time to people's interest. And second of all, it allows a publisher to make more money, either by keeping everything under wraps and selling first serial rights to a magazine, as Simon & Schuster did with Hillary Clinton's book. A successful embargo can consolidate sales into a few days, which push the book up bestseller list faster.
And bestseller list, if you're number one bestseller, that looks good on the cover.
Exactly. That itself sells books.
Now, what happens if somebody, the Associated Press in the case of the Hillary Clinton book or the Daily News in the case of the Harry Potter book, what happens if you break an embargo?
Well, I think that there's two answers to that question. The first is in both of the cases that you mentioned, the Daily News and the Associated Press actually, as I understand it, violated the copyright of those books. So it wasn't just that they broke an embargo, which was an agreement between them and the publisher. It was that they also violated copyright law.
So if they found a copy and bought it in a health food store in Brooklyn, they weren't provided a copy of something in advance and there was no agreement.
Exactly. In the case, in 1983, The Nation magazine was sued for publishing some excerpts from President Gerald Ford's book, and the Supreme Court did in fact find them guilty of copyright infringement.
And what was their penalty, do you recall?
I believe they got off with a slap on the wrist. Calvin Trillin actually said, why would they sue The Nation for punitive damages? They know they would only get some pencils and a couple of folding chairs.
Now, there's another reason for embargoes, as I read in a piece you wrote for Slate. There is a process of protecting authors who might get negative publicity, and obviously...
In the case of Stephen Glass, for instance, who I think had really alienated many other journalists with his behavior at the New Republic, it was, I think, probably intended and certainly succeeded at protecting him from a barrage of negative publicity beforehand.
And has the use, to your knowledge, of an embargo ever backfired?
Well, I don't want to name any names because I
think please.
That would be unfair, but I think that, you know, it is a risk that you take. If you say nobody can see this book until a certain day, there is always the chance that something more exciting will come along and nobody will care about your book by the time that day comes around.
Well, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Jen Bluestein is a public affairs publicist and wrote a June 9th article in Slate magazine about the use of embargoes, and she was with us from her home in Brooklyn, New York. And now with us here in Studio 3A is Joe Neal, a deputy science editor here at NPR. Nice of you to come in.
Good afternoon.
We've been talking about the use of embargoes in book publishing. There's another area, science reporting, where the embargo is often used. How does this work?
Well, it's used every single day of the week. The scientific journals, the medical journals, give us a copy of their publications generally about 3 or 4 days in advance, sometimes as much as a week in advance. It used to be that they mailed us the copy or FedExed us the copy. Now mostly we can go online and see it in advance at a certain time. And the theory is, and it often works in practice, is that by giving science writers and health writers an extra few days to assemble a report, you have a less sensationalized, more objective final report, rather than just putting out something very complicated, having a lot of misunderstanding and confusion out there. It was, you know, back in the 60s, it was used to great advantage by the New England Journal of Medicine. The editor there was complaining that too much of medical news was becoming sensationalized, and the system, I mean, had already been used for many years in various areas mm-hmm. of news, but began giving advance copies saying, we'll do this under the agreement that you all have a level playing field, the publication time is such and such, and you'll do a better report. And I think in many cases that has been true.
I have to say, when I covered the Pentagon budget, a pretty hefty item, as you might imagine, is usually given to reporters ahead of time so that they can wade through it, usually with the benefit of background briefings, that sort of thing, so they'll have a chance of understanding it.
It's endemic in the news business, mm-hmm. and especially science.
But in science, what happens if you break the embargo?
Well, you lose your rights to the advance copy.
They notice. They police this.
They police it to a degree. I mean, there are times when it's unclear. They will issue a notice that an embargo has been broken and that everyone's free to report something from that point onward. But you never quite hear what the enforcement mechanism actually was. I know one wire service lost their subscription to one of the journals for 6 months, which meant if they couldn't get advance information, they were just going to have to wait and see what the stories were in other news media, or wait for their publication to arrive in the mail. And that would put us at a great disadvantage if we were reporting the news a couple of days after everyone else.
So have you ever seen a story and say, well, maybe this time it's worth it?
Well, there are occasions where things look like they're of imminent importance to the public health. I think this happens less and less, but when I first started out in this business 20 years ago, there routinely were journal stories that just were clearly would affect people's lives immediately, but they had been delayed for publication, and now there's another week embargo, and people's lives were clearly, and health were being affected by this delay simply because the journal, as our earlier guest said, wanted to boost its profits by ginning up the publicity over it. Now, more and more, the journals have been called on that by journalists, and they're prone to release the information in a more timely manner.
Some people would argue, Joe, that withholding information even for a couple of days is not in the public's interest. Why do we agree to this?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly true, and I think that the worst thing in scientific embargoes is the attempt by some journals to expand it beyond an immediate beyond the issue that's right at hand. Some go as far as saying that researchers can't talk to science journalists about anything that they've submitted for possible publication many weeks later, or if they ever plan to publish their work in that journal, that they're prohibited from talking about it. And I think that puts a real chilling effect on the free flow of information. And the public pays for a lot of this research, and the public has an absolute right to know what's going on.
Joe Neal, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Joe Neal is a deputy science editor here at NPR. Among the headlines here at NPR News, another American soldier was killed early today when the Army ambulance he was traveling in was ambushed south of Baghdad. A second American soldier was wounded in that incident. A 3-day meeting of Roman Catholic bishops began today at the Vatican. The church is wrestling with the ongoing sex abuse and cover-up scandal, as well as a new negative publicity. The bishop in Phoenix, Arizona, had to resign this week after he was charged in a hit-and-run accident. Those stories coming up later on All Things Considered. Right now, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.